House Committee on Business and Consumer Affairs on Monday, May 13, 1991 at 9 a.m. in hearing room 357 at Capitol Building. Today's agenda is a work session on House Bill 2792 and a public hearing and a possible work session on Senate Bill 205 and Senate Bill 206.
House Committee on Business and Consumer Affairs, Subcommittee Number 3, will come to order, and we will open with a work session on House Bill 2792. Someone from the dentist and the hygienist would like to join us at the table here, maybe we can discuss the amendments. I think there is only one set, unless I'm mistaken. These are my amendments. Apologize to Nan for not having been able to sit down with you and discuss them, but I hope your folks have had a chance to look over them. I don't know. I guess to begin, and I hope I have these, I hope these are correct. The first amendment would be page 1 of the printed bill. I guess we'll just go all the way through these. Terry, good.
It deletes the whole
bill. Does the whole front, right?
And back. So it's just the.
Okay. To read any dentist. Okay. I guess I'm going to ask Nan if you have any problems with this first. Section 1 is amended to read, any dentist may employ a dental hygienist who may engage in the practice of dental hygiene in the office of such dentist under the general supervision of a dentist.
Madam Chair?
Yes.
The only change is print 3 there, and we have no opposition to that change in
Section
the amendment.
A dental hygienist under the general supervision of a dentist may engage in the practice of dental hygiene in any place where limited access patients are located. Your folks are all right with that, Nan? Okay. Representative NATO.
Yes, Nan. It repeals the section that requires that the number of dentists be the same as the number of dental hygienists.
Madam Chair, Representative NATO, Jane Edwards is here from the board. I discussed this with her on Friday. She feels that if there would be, we were concerned about a dentist going out and opening up, quote, a hygiene mill. But Jane assures me that the board, no doubt this would come to light. Someone would make a complaint and they would investigate it. And is my understanding that there was a large dental clinic in Portland that had more hygienists than were allowed by rule, and they did invest the complaint, and I'm not sure what the outcome was. So we feel that the board has adequate powers to go ahead and make sure that there are not too many hygienists working for one dentist.
Follow-up question?
Please.
So it's under Section 4 that the board's rules, existing rules, or if they adopted new rules, would speak to this issue of number of?
I do not believe so. I think it's repealed. Perhaps Jane Edwards should speak to that.
This is in relation to Section 3, is that correct?
Right.
On the old bill.
On the old bill. That's my intent was to repeal that section. So if you'd like to comment on that.
Yeah, yes, Madam Chairman, members of the committee. I'm Jane Edwards. I'm the Executive Director of the Board of Dentistry. It's our feeling that we don't need the authority to limit the number of hygienists. If a dentist or a clinic were to operate a prophy mill or simply bring in a bunch of hygienists, be running patients through with cleanings, we would get complaints because the patients wouldn't be receiving the other services that they needed. And we had a clinic, and I don't want to say it was a prophy mill. It wasn't. But we did get complaints because the patients were sort of getting recalled for cleanings, and the doctors were missing lesions and missing decay and missing some of the other problems that they had. And so then the board dealt with it by saying, by reprimanding several doctors because they had failed to diagnose abscesses and treat those abscesses. So it's our feeling that if somebody ran a prophy mill, they would neglect the other treatment. That would come to the board's attention, and then the board would deal with those doctors for neglecting other treatment that was necessary. Currently, our rules allow actually two hygienists per dentist. About every month, we get a request from a dentist to have three, and those are routinely approved. Part of the problem, I guess, with the current law has to do with sort of scheduling. You see, a lot of hygienists work part-time, so a lot of times dentists may want to have three hygienists on a particular day, and currently they can't do that without permission of the board, which is why we get so many requests. You get clinics like Kaiser, for example, where they have, you know, a number of clinics, and trying to make sure that they never on the premises have more than two dentists per hygienist is just sort of administratively a problem. You may have a backlog of patients needing cleanings, and they want to bring in hygienists on a temporary basis and do the cleanings, but they have to do this sort of juggling to make sure they never have more than two hygienists per dentist on premise. So it becomes kind of an administrative problem for clinics. It becomes an administrative problem for the board in that we are approving these things routinely. If, in fact, this is abused, and if, in fact, dentists go out and you know, hire, you know, five, six, seven, eight hygienists, then we think we'll see complaints because other treatments being neglected. And I suppose if we find, you know, many problems with it, we would come back to the legislature and propose some solutions to the problems we see.
Madam Chair, if you did see problems that resulted from this, would you have the ability by rule to do this any longer, or we would be?
No, Madam Chair, Representative Nader, I do not believe we would have the ability to limit it by rule.
Madam Chair, quite frankly, that disturbs me a little bit. Just I think it's a great idea to, you know, get rid of these administrative problems, but I would want to just keep that power to take another look if we're not in session, if it turns out to be a problem.
Madam Chair, may I comment on this
section
also?
Please, Del.
Del Isham, representing the Oregon Dental Hygiene Association. As you can see from the original bill, the way we had requested the bill would be an outright prohibition. The proposed amendment that you've made repeals this section. We said in our testimony that that we could also support the Board of Dentistry's suggestion that the section simply be repealed. And I think there is a safeguard for the public here when you consider that regardless of the number of dental hygienists, the dentist is still required to provide general supervision. And that is the safeguard. What this basically does is place a little bit more responsibility on the part of the dentist in operating in a professional manner and alleviating some of the board's necessity of at their monthly meetings approving additional dental hygienists, saving the time for the board as well as the dentists that have to come before the board and make this monthly request.
Do any of you have any other comments on what is left of the bill?
Madam Chair, I'd like to comment on the other two deletions, if I may.
If you would.
Del Isham again. The deletion of the proposed added wording to general supervision was designed to include some of the independent contractor language elsewhere in the law into the general supervision definition. With the testimony that we heard from the ODA, their attorney said that it was possible under certain circumstances for a dental hygienist to become an independent contractor. Therefore, we see no need for this additional language, and so would support that amendment. Sub 5 under Section 2, there was testimony that many people provide this function that are unlicensed already. And therefore, I think we could conclude, based on the testimony, that this is an unlicensed function already, and therefore does not need to appear in the dental hygiene law. And so we support this amendment also. So in total, we support the amendments that you've proposed.
And Nan and Jane, you're all right with this?
Yes, the executive, Madam Chair, the executive committee of the Dental Association met Friday morning, and they approved these amendments. They were concerned about nitrous oxide use in a limited access facility, but then there is in the rules already a rule on the books, and so it would take care of their concerns. And at this time, we don't think we should put it into law, as long as there's a rule that the board can follow.
Terrific. We will not move on these amendments today due to lack of a quorum. What we'll do is we'll go ahead and Representative Stein may join us, and what we'll do is we'll close the work session, at least until she joins us. If we cannot get back to that today, we will schedule for Thursday, but she may be up here shortly. So we'll close the work session on House Bill 2792. And we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 205. Terry, if you give us a little background on this.
House Bill, Senate Bill 205 establishes in statute the category for psychologist resident for the purpose of gaining supervised experience. It allows residents to practice psychology on the residents would be subject to the same code of conduct and sanctity as a licensed psychologist and psychologist.
Thank you. Good morning. Is it Bonnie?
Yes.
Time you'd like to begin.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Bonnie Wilson. I'm the administrator for the Board of Psychologist Examiners. Senate Bill 205 allows the board to adopt a rule that would require supervised work experience. Currently, the law states that 2 years of supervised employment under the direction of a licensed psychologist in the state of Oregon or under the direction of a person considered by the board to have equivalent supervisory competence. Senate Bill 205 provides a mechanism to give the board legal authority to design a contract for postdoctoral supervised work experience. And basically, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer them for you.
Yes, Representative Nato.
So to obtain a doctoral degree in psychology, let me just see how this works. You would have, besides the educational requirements, you have to have 2 years of supervised employment?
That's correct. Currently, the statute requires 2 years of supervised work experience. The board's policy is that one can be pre-doctoral, say an improved internship, and 1 year must be post-doctoral. The statute also allows people to acquire supervised work experience in exempt settings. A state, federal, or county institution is exempt from licensure. But there are people in after they receive their doctorate, that want to be in a private practice. So the board is establishing a contract or a mechanism for that supervision to be, I guess, supervised by the board to make sure that that person, while acquiring the year of postdoctoral supervised work experience, would meet certain requirements, such as 2 hours of supervision per week.
So right now, you can only get it in public institutions?
Well, right now, it's not defined, actually. It just says 2 years of supervised work experience. This amendment would allow the board to, I guess, legally use the contract to regulate that supervision acquired outside of the exempt setting stated in the statute.
To be more specific with the timeline, as you said, 2 hours of such and such a training.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And what is 1 year of full-time postdoctoral supervised work experience? The board would define that as 1,500 hours.
Follow-up question?
Please.
I'm just trying to get in my head, what is the status right now? It's only in a public institution, or can you be in a private setting, but there's simply not enough overseeing or whatever?
Madam Chair, Representative Nato, there is the 2 years of supervised work experience is stated in the law. The board has a rule that requires 1 year can be pre-doctoral, 1 year must be post-doctoral. Basically, the board, in good faith, has developed a contract that it requires anyone outside of a public institution to agree to and sign the contract. But what the board wanted to do and propose this legislation to basically put it in law that the year of postdoctoral, you know, the contract is a legal document, I guess, to require that that postdoctoral supervised work experience be monitored by the board.
And you believe that this is necessary? The board cannot just do this within its own power by rule?
Well,
do you think
the board
this would give it more strength?
I think so. I think it makes it more of obviously the statute is the bottom line, a rule. I mean, I guess anyone could interpret the rule to indicate the 2 years of supervised work experience required could be pre-doctoral. And, you know, a lot of people take a lot of time between their master's and their doctorate, and so the board really feels that after the person receives their doctoral degree, that is important experience to require after they've actually earned the degree.
Follow-up question?
Please.
How will you determine if a person comes from out of state? If they have done their postdoctoral in another state, how would you determine, and their supervisory time as well, how would you grant them a license in this state?
Okay. Madam Chair, Representative NATO, the board has the application form addresses that. The application form for licensure requires that the person list pre-doctoral experience and postdoctoral experience. And where the board couldn't regulate if a person was practicing in California, the board would require that supervision be under the direction of a licensed psychologist in the state of California or someone deemed equivalent. Equivalency could mean that the person have a doctoral degree and maybe not be licensed, but that supervision would be by a doctoral level person.
A follow-up question,
please.
How many applications do you get every year for a new psychologist?
Madam Chairperson NATO, probably around 75 to 100. We process that many each year, new applicants. They don't all go through the licensing process in a year, but I think our numbers would prove out 75 to 100 new applicants.
Is this similar to what the requirements that other states have? I'm just a little concerned about setting up some requirements here that would make it more difficult, say, to practice here, or what kind of reciprocity do we have on this?
Madam Chair, Representative NATO, I think most states require 2 years of supervised work experience. I couldn't speak factually because I don't know if it's a year of pre-doc and a year of postdoctoral. I don't think that we would be limiting or denying anyone the privilege to practice in the state. It's a very reasonable requirement for licensure. And in fact, it is in place right now where the board's rules require 1 year must be postdoctoral. What this proposal would do is just to make it a requirement by law that the person after receipt of the doctorate has 1 year of postdoctoral supervised work experience, and that the board's contract, which I have a copy of and I would be more than happy to give that to you, gives the board the authority to regulate that year of postdoctoral supervised work experience, more so than regulate, to make sure that it meets what the requirements are for supervised work experience to meet the requirements for licensure.
I would appreciate a copy of that.
Sure.
Well, any further questions? All right, Bonnie, if you'd like to just stay right there, we'll close the public hearing on Senate Bill 205 and open a public hearing on Senate Bill 206.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Bonnie Wilson, and I'm the administrator for the Board of Psychologist Examiners. Senate Bill 206 requires that every candidate for licensure successfully pass an oral examination administered by the Board of Psychologist Examiners. The oral examination requires demonstration of knowledge relating to the Oregon laws and administrative rules relating to the practice of psychology in the state of Oregon. In recent years, many new laws have emerged which significantly affect the conduct of psychology. In particular, legislation pertaining to involuntary commitment of alleged mentally ill and reporting of child and elderly abuse and the psychotherapist client privilege. Without the opportunity to assess a candidate's knowledge of such laws, the board cannot hold forth such licensees as ready and qualified to practice in the state. Currently, the law allows the board the discretion to require a written and oral examination. It is the board's opinion that the oral examination should be mandatory for licensure in Oregon. Again, if you have questions, I'd be happy to answer.
Madam Chair, Representative Nato. Who would administer, it would be administered by the board itself?
Madam Chair, Representative Nato, yes.
Mm-hmm. So, a follow-up question?
Yes, please.
Right now, does the board say there's 75 licensees applying, potential licensees? Does the board right now have an oral examination for each of those applicants?
Representative Nato, yes. The board requires that every person practicing in the state of Oregon pass the national written examination and the state board oral. So that requirement is already set up. ORS 675.050 gives the board the discretion to waive the written and the oral examination. What the board wants to require is that every person that practices in the state of Oregon have an oral examination. And the reason for that is people come in from out of state who have been practicing in Wisconsin, California, Washington, and are not familiar with Oregon laws regarding commitment procedures, child abuse, elderly abuse reporting requirements. And the board is observed over the last couple of years that when people come from out of state where they meet the educational requirements, the experience requirements, they pass the written examination, when they sit for an oral, they're not familiar with Oregon laws. And that's troublesome to the board. So the board would like in statute that would require everyone that practices in the state of Oregon be aware of Oregon laws as they relate to the practice of psychology.
Follow-up question, please. So it's your intent then that the oral examination test not necessarily the whole range of issues that for psychologists, but specifically Oregon laws as they relate to the practice of psychology. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, Representative Neal, that seems to be the most troublesome area. The individual would be required to take a standard oral examination. But where the board has recognized the problems to be, it are around Oregon laws. Most people that have been practicing in another state are very conversant on the practice of psychology as it relates to their client. It's where they find that the problem lies is in knowing about what Oregon requires of psychologists as far as reporting child abuse, confidentiality, lots of the issues that are really practice issues more so than educational issues.
Bonnie, why is it that those questions are not incorporated into the written?
Madam Chair, that's a national written examination.
And so and it's a generalized standard?
Absolutely, yes.
Mm-hmm. Another question? Do you feel that, say, a person practices in another state in a limited area of psychology, say, did not deal with children's issues or civil commitments, simply a consultant to, say, marital counseling or something. Do you feel it is important that they also have the knowledge of these other areas as well if they practice in this state? I mean, I can imagine, I guess my only question is somebody who's been practicing for 5 years or 10 years in a certain area and might lose some knowledge of the other areas, but it doesn't affect them so much if they're staying in that particular area. Maybe you could speak to that.
Madam Chair, Representative Nadeau, the license to practice psychology in the state is the generic license. We don't have specialty areas. And the board sends out, prior to the oral examination, all of the laws that would be significant for a person to know to practice in Oregon. We send out all the relating laws of confidentiality, child abuse, elderly abuse, privileged communication, all of that to the individual to study and to prepare him or herself for the oral examination. The board really feels that that's minimum knowledge for a person who wants to practice psychology in the state of Oregon.
Follow-up question, please. So then the oral test would be based on the written materials that were sent out?
That's correct.
Just for the record, I'd say I do prefer oral exams. I think we need to move away from these rote written exams. I think that does give you the ability to test somebody and question them if their answers seem inappropriate and basically have some dialogue to really try to get at it.
Anything further to add, Bonnie?
Thank you
very
much.
Any further questions, Representative Nadeau?
Nothing further.
Neither of these bills, for the record, either Senate Bill 205 or 206, have a fiscal or revenue impact. And as we will do with 2792, we will move this over for a work session. Oh, we can't.
Yes.
Yes, we can. On Thursday.
No.
No, the next week.
Okay.
Apologize. You know, 24-hour rule here. And there shouldn't be a problem. It is just that we are lacking one member to move this out today.
Okay.
Thank you. We will let you know when we reschedule that. If there's nothing further, Terry, do you have anything else?
No.
Nothing. Okay. This committee is adjourned.